The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
Great to have you here for Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Join the conversation at 770-5633. 770-KMED. You got a pebble? Go ahead and talk about it. You'll feel better about it. That's what this is all about. Consider me your unofficial counsel, Father Bill. Whatever. I wouldn't want to take the place of a Father David who ends up getting in touch with the show now and then. You're the first one, David. You're the first one, David. All right. 770-5633. By the way, we're streamed on KMED.com. You can do that and a lot of other services. Also, Facebook.com/Bill Myers Show. That feed is up this morning. We appreciate you watching if that ends up being the case. And, of course, listening on 106.3, 106.7 FM in South Jackson County, 105.9 in Grants Pass, Josephine County, and 99.3 KBXG. All the over greater Josephine County, all the way out to the tunnels, practically on the border. You can hear it that way, 6 to 9 in the morning, and then it becomes the jukebox at 9 o'clock, okay? All right, big day in the political world here. Wisconsin Supreme Court race, I was talking with a guest about that on Friday. This was something that just kind of snuck up on us, and I didn't realize that this Wisconsin Supreme Court race was going to be such a big deal when it comes to the Trump agenda, because it's a race to actually flip the court back to a more conservative look. And this is also a swing state, and they're doing their best to really concentrate a lot on that. Elon Musk ended up putting a couple of $1 million or more into it, actually awarding $1 million for some people paying attention to this. And George Soros, of course, the evil emperor, ended up putting in $2-3 million too. A lot of money's been flowing around this one. We also have the Florida special election going on today, which could be determining the balance of power in this one. And this special election called after President Trump nominated Representative Michael Waltz to National Security Advisor at the beginning of his term. Now, Waltz won that district in Florida, which has its special election by 33%. And it's it was thought before to be kind of a shoe-in, but there's a stronger chance for the Democrats because the Democrats are getting hissy fitted and finding their political muscle in their anger. And I understand it'd be kind of the same way if it was a Democrat president, and that's the way we would be acting there too. So much, much tighter than we thought it would be. Okay, so keeping an eye on those two things, because it's not exactly like the Republicans have a lot of majority to be able to spare. As Cliff Bentz, Congressman Bentz, was talking about a few days ago on the show, 1-2 votes, that's about it. You can afford to maybe lose Massey on some of the spending bills, but that's about it. Massey, of course, the conscience. I would love to have everybody voting like Massey, but a fellow would just be dreaming at this point in time, okay? But yeah, 1 or 2 is all you can afford to lose. It will be interesting to see what happens today on the House, because they're going to be voting on a bill which mandates voter ID and cleaning up the voter rolls. And this is the Voter Eligibility, the Safeguarding American Voter Eligibility Act. That's the SAVE Act. And it was introduced by Representative Chip Roy of Texas. And it will amend the National Voter Registration Act to require proof of United States citizenship in order to register an individual to vote in elections for federal office. Now, the GOP had led House did pass the SAVE Act last year, which also pushes states to remove non-citizens from voter rolls. The bill never got the vote in the Democratic-controlled Senate. Now they're thinking that there may be enough juice to be able to get this voted on in the Senate. So there we go. That's a couple of big political stories here of national import. You know, yesterday we were talking a lot about the judge's ruling in City of Grants Pass, which has more or less making it next to impossible to enforce a lot unless in some ways, I guess, at the bottom line here, you either come up with 150 tent spaces, City of Grants Pass, or else you can't really enforce much of anything with your homelessness. And this was the ruling that came out of it. It's an injunction. And this Disability Rights Oregon is continuing to push these kind of things. I'm starting to look at Disability Rights Oregon as yet another left-wing sock puppet movement of sorts, and I don't think there's any way of looking around that. And you can kind of see this in a story I was reading this morning, and I'm going to try to explore this a little bit later here, but the basics of it, how Oregon's laws on forcing mental health treatment could change this year. Because one of the biggest issues that we're dealing with right now, besides drug addiction and alcoholism within the homelessness community, is that there's a lot of mental illness, some of it caused by the drug and alcohol abuse. Or maybe it's a result of the drug and alcohol abuse. I don't know. But one way or the other, Oregon has very, very tight civil commitment. You know, it's really hard to get a crazy person or someone who's really in trouble committed. And there's been work to change this for a long, long time. State has wrestled for years with ordering civil commitment. This is in a story at OPB, Oregon Public Broadcasting. And people who have seriously bubble off plumb relatives, loved ones, friends, things like that, have very difficult or great difficulty, rather, trying to get them in. So given the homelessness problem, there's talk that they might try to solve this. And the way OPB details it, it was really interesting. Oregon's statute for civil commitment is very vague. It doesn't include guidance for what it means to be in danger to yourself or others or to be at risk of serious physical harm. So it's not really defined all that well. And so courts have been interpreting it on their own. And much kind of like with Josephine County Circuit Court with the homelessness law, they're interpreting the civil commitment laws pretty much the same thing. So what they're proposing is altering the commitment standard. It would direct a judge to deem a person dangerous to themselves or others if the judge believes that harm could happen within the next month. That's a broader standard than the current rule, which focuses on imminent harm. Someone who says, hey, you know, I'm going to kill myself today. And so this would allow people to get committed more easily. Now, what's the group that is against changing the commitment standard? Disability Rights Oregon. Disability Rights Oregon, the same one filing for the homelessness encampment in Grants Pass, that there shouldn't be any rules. And they say, along with defense attorneys who represent people in civil commitment cases, that the charges are obviously dubious and that could make forcible treatment easier. So apparently, Disability Rights Oregon thinks it is morally superior to have mentally ill people on the streets of the cities. I guess that's my only way to interpret this, okay? All right. Given that we do have these mental illness issues, a couple of other mentally ill stories, we're going to talk more about this with State Senator Noel Robinson, who will join me after 6:30. The Oregon Senate advanced that bill. You know, the bad book bill. Remember that one? Yeah. Yesterday, they ended up passing Senate Bill 1098, 18-10 vote. Now goes on to the House of Representatives. And it would really take, and I hate the way that it gets reported. They talk about this being book bans. These are challenges that parents in school districts would bring up to their school districts. They're saying, this is just, you know, this stuff, this porn that is in the high school or the junior high libraries, it doesn't belong there. It's not age appropriate. It shouldn't be there. And they're talking about, oh my gosh, we're seeing more of these book bans than ever. Yeah, because the state of Oregon is trying to push more porny books into the system, because this is the Island of Misfit Humans agenda, really. When it comes right down to it, you know, LGBTQ, transgender, all the rest of it. You know, if we can't condition your kid to be trans, well, yes, we're going to keep working on it. We're going to keep working on it and make sure that everybody is dissatisfied with the way they were born, I guess. Yeah, I know I'm engaging in a bit of hyperbole with that, but that does seem to be the way the state of Oregon is running. And these are not book bans. These are school boards that are saying, we're not going to take taxpayer money and purchase these books. But it gets reported as a book ban, like it's some Nazi era sort of thing where here is conservatives throwing the porny books out there on the pile and burning them and walking around with their Elon Musk Tesla salute from the convention. You know, that kind of thing. It's nonsense, but it's serious. It's serious nonsense. I'll talk about that with Noah Robinson. He had his own bill, which, of course, being a Republican, got no hearing whatsoever. But we'll get you the latest on that and other news. We also have some stories about what's going on. Pete Hegseth wanting to look at military readiness and physical requirements. We have some news about that and also some pushback, too. This is the Bill Myers Show, and you're on KMED at 99.3 KBXG.
Hi, this is Lisa from Kelly's Automotive Service in Grants Pass in Medford. I asked my staff what was the one thing they wish more people would do to save themselves money. Overwhelmingly, the answer was a pre-buyer's inspection. Investing a little upfront can save you thousands later. Unfortunately, we see a lot of post-buyer inspections when it's often too late. If you're thinking about a new-to-you vehicle, please get a pre-buyer's inspection with us or someone else you trust. Kelly's Automotive Service, where we service your vehicle, but take care of you.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down. Get it going slower.
Izervay is proven to slow GA progression.
Izervay.
Izervay or Avastin Captid Pagel is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com.
The Rogue Gardener, not a big fan of spraying for weeds, maybe with one exception.
If you're dealing with a bunch of difficult to control weeds like Bermuda grass, knock those down with glyphosate, I should say, like Roundup. And you could do that spraying, but don't neglect the fact that now you have at least three and possibly even four seasons of weed seeds in that ground wanting to come up.
The Rogue Gardener, Saturdays 10 to noon, Sunday morning encore at 9, sponsored by Grange Co-op on KMED.
Hi, I'm Charlene, owner of American Industrial Door, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
21 after 6, 770-5633. We always like more cowbell on the bumper music now and then. I can't help it. We go to Deplorable Patrick. Hello, DP. How you doing? You wanted to weigh in on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. And that, by the way, it's open phones on that right now, 770-5633. What's on your mind, huh?
Well, good morning. The tactics of the loony left, and I wish I had more specifics. Maybe you can add specifics. I'd love that.
I'll try.
But, yeah, I had times recently when I've heard these idiot Democrats up there talking about, you're trying to start a civil war, and yet when I look around, they've tried to shoot President Trump. They're trying to burn Teslas in the lots and deface the dealerships. I think it's time we realize the Democrats are already waging civil war.
Well, I'm glad you brought this up because I noticed that for years, a lot of conservative types have been saying, well, what's going to happen when the Civil War breaks out or if it goes to that, or they would, you know, opine on such things. We're already in a soft one, aren't we?
That's my point. And I think there's another example, but I can't remember what it was. But those are a couple of really warlike things, that, especially when you have really stupid people who can't come up with anything more sophisticated than to try to burn a car.
I would also say, though, that there is another soft civil war, and that is the war of the homelessness community. And it's not that I'm calling homeless people bad people. That's not it. Many of them are hurting and really having problems. But the state policy about homelessness and the codified laws of homelessness are really a war against any decent, reasonable cities that don't want to turn over their parks and their public land over to disorderly people. So that's another version of the soft war. Now, they may think that they, as in the left-wing power structure, think that they're doing it for compassion. But All you have to do is look at the results of it. We have more homelessness than ever. We have more drunken, disorderly, and criminal behavior in the camps than ever. And we're told that the only solution to this is that you have to build more of it. And that, you know, that's another soft war, I think, that's hardening.
I had that thought. I had that thought as you were bringing it up earlier. That's another element of just to bog down society. And another one is this idiot judge when Trump was deporting MS-13 and Turnitagua people. You bring those criminals back here.
Fortunately, they kind of, they claim they didn't ignore it, but they did kind of ignore it, or they're waiting. Well, it's halfway, you know, there. But I think that even if they had heard it, I would have ignored it and then just say, okay, what are you going to do about it at this point? I think is all you can do. Because we're at the, well, that's another reason why we have a lot of news this week at the Supreme Court, because a lot of these emergency order cases have been brought before the courts. And there's going to have to be a decision made. Really, this is going to be up to, unfortunately, I hate to say it, John Roberts. You know, John Roberts, yep, may be one of these deciders on something, because it comes right down to it, is who gets to run the executive branch? Is it the executive, him or herself, whoever? If we got a female president, that's it. Is it him or her? Or is it the judiciary? If everything has to be run through the judiciary, then we really are under just a total judicial supremacy tyranny, is really what we're at right now. You don't have three separate branches of government any longer. It's a very dangerous time for that reason. Appreciate the call there, DP. Let me go to Holly Morton. Hello, Holly. How you doing? Welcome.
Good morning, and pebble in your shoe Tuesday. You know, I've got a boulder in my shoe for a very long time, and that is that they're all, it seems like they're all these little incident, you know, isolated incidents. But the fact of the matter is, when you put it all together, we have to see that what's happening is that they're trying to chase any conservatives out of Southern Oregon. We're the last bastion of voting conservatives in this state, you know, in group. And they're working really hard to kick us out. There are so many different things that they're doing simultaneously that people don't necessarily, you know, they're chasing one rabbit down a hole at a time.
But yeah, and I would say that part of that is the homelessness policies here for the state. And it affects us deeply here in Southern Oregon.
Here's one thing that I haven't heard very much about. Oregon Law Center is filing these lawsuits. Oregon Law Center is an NGO. So we pay taxes. They go up to Salem, and then they come back to support these NGOs. So we are actually paying, taxpayers are paying for the various law center that is filing these lawsuits and so forth against the citizens of this county. So we're paying for it. And, you know, it's such a huge racket that, you know, it's just hard to get your head around.
Do you know if any of the changes at the federal level, since you obviously have been looking into it, I'm not really all that familiar with Oregon Law Center. It looks like it's something I'm going to have to study more, maybe talk with Mr. X about it too, since he studies the law so often. Are there a lot of federal dollars that go through Oregon Law Center? Do you know?
I do not know. I'm going to find out about that myself. I'd love to talk to Mr. X about it, because I'm really, really concerned about the fact that they're an NGO, because they pull our tax dollars. I don't know about federal dollars.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's happening federally. I mean, we've got so many different things that need to be handled. Number one in the Rubik's Cube turn is we've got to get free and fair elections.
Well, so I believe the SAVE Act in Congress this week is certainly a start along the right way, assuming that it gets a hearing in the Senate. And I don't see why it wouldn't, except, you know, Maybe because of the Rhino Republicans might stop it. I don't know. It's hard to say.
I looked in there today to see what was going on, and they've had, you know, tons of people call in, and they don't approve that. They say, oh no, mail-in voting is the way we need to go. Well, absolutely not. You know, and they say, oh, you know, there's no voter fraud. Who are they kidding? I mean, there's tremendous voter fraud in our state. It's one of the worst.
A lot of it is hidden, though, and it gets hidden in the process. And now, as we well know, rules that were created by the Secretary of State make it next to impossible to audit, to really get your hands on the ballots and be able to examine what's happening in many of these elections. Remember the case that former Senator Linthicum and State Senator Kim Thatcher ended up filing, you know, the grand jury thing. Hey, you know, we would like to look at some of these election results. And Jackson County said, well, according to the Secretary of State's rules, we'd have to charge you close to $1 million to be able to look at the ballot. And if it costs you almost $1 million in Jackson and maybe less in Josephine County to look at the ballots and actually examine them and do a real forensic audit, we don't really have control over our elections, Holly, at this point in our mail-in ballot system. It's a big deal, really is.
It's huge, and there are so many aspects of it.
Yeah, because if you can't check it, you can't. You know, that's why I call it a faith-based election. I don't like doing that, and I'm not bagging on the county clerks that end up doing this, because they, as agencies of the state, counties are agencies of the state, have to dance to the tune of the Secretary of State's rules on elections, because that's the office that ends up controlling that. So they're having to do what they're told, more or less. And so I'm not bagging on them. I just want to make people understand that. I'm not bagging on Renee, or not bagging on the Jackson County clerk or anyone else. Okay? I think we can be clear on that.
The voter rolls that we have, you know, you can't clean up the voter rolls. It's against the law to clean up your own voter rolls.
That's right. And that was a state legislature deal, too. So the state legislature has been in on the fix, unfortunately, and it's getting fixier all the time. I don't know if that's a proper term or not, but that's the way it feels to me. The fix is in, and it's getting fixier, unless something happens.
And I want to add one last thing. I know you're a busy guy, but
that's all right.
You know, the city council, this current city council, is working very hard to solve the homeless problem. It's a difficult problem. They're doing a phenomenal job. And, I had one very silly person recently say, oh, you know, day one, they got everything all goofed up. Well, they got handed a big mess. And, you know, the lawsuits were in motion. Our former mayor is involved in the lawsuits. I mean, the city council got handled a mess. I have never seen a group of people work so hard to get the problem solved. And I do think they've got a plan in motion that is going to get the problem solved. They're looking for a piece of property to do it on, but they've got a program put in place that I think is going to be absolutely excellent.
Do you think they're going to do something that takes the homelessness camps and gets them out of the city core? What does your gut say about this? Have you heard any rumors?
What they're going to do, but more important than that, because you can't just put sick people in a box and say, okay, that's going to fix it all. You know, what they're going to be able to do is get a large enough piece of property that they can segment the different populations, mothers with kids, elderly people, and get them from the hardcore drug addicts. And drug addicts are not going to be able to just go in there and hang out like they do now.
Yeah, you don't want to mix the people who are savable from the ones that are going to take some more heavy duty activity to save them.
No.
Right? Yeah.
So what they're going to do is they're going to require that these people are in a drug program getting clean and sober if they want to have anything. They can't, you know, you can't just come in and say, hey, we want pizzas and all the things that they're getting at this point.
I will be really surprised, or not surprised, but really interested to see what happens, because this may be something in which federal action, which of course helps control the grant stream funding, which goes into a lot of our states, may help a bit here. The Trump administration is very open about wanting to change and get away from the Obama-era housing first policy, which is what they have in place for homelessness. And this is what Oregon is all over. And essentially, no rules. We're not worried about how broken you are or how crazy you may be with your mental illness or how drug addicted and irresponsible. We have to get you a free house. You know, that's kind of like what federal policy is, except as you can see, Holly, we've just been getting more of the problem rather than trying to help people get cured. Well, the Trump administration says we want to tie this to people working to get themselves clean and sober and getting off the drugs. And if you have mental issues, we want to get you into a program and get those solved too. And ultimately, which program do you think is more kind in the long run? You know, you look at the way Oregon runs it, which all we have to do is just get you an affordable house and everything is fixed. Or the administration now wanting to say, listen, we would like to get you off the drugs and get you straight up and narrow. What's more kind? What's kinder in the long run, Holly? Yeah.
I think it's much kinder to get people off drugs. There's no way of fixing things when a person has a drug and alcohol problem.
There's no logic in there. no logic inside there because you're just going for the drugs, and I understand it. And, you know, oh, my gosh, I have such sympathy for these people, even if some of it is, you know, a self-inflicted gunshot wound with the drugs and alcohol, okay? But still, you know, there but for the grace of God go any of us, okay?
We need a program that basically parallels what the world we live in, and that is that you have to have accountability.
Yeah, right. I like that. Holly, I appreciate the call. Thanks for that, okay? 770-5633. We're running a little late, but I think Noah will be fine if I cut into his time a little bit. We'll talk with him in a little bit. Hi, KMED. Good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Hey, good morning. Morning, Bill. This is Wayne from Central Point.
Hi, Wayne.
I had a little depressed Sunday. I went by Food for Less. And what I like to do is when they have these young kids doing fundraisers and they're selling the world's number one best chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
So I go up to these two girls, they look to be teenagers, and I said, what grade are you in? And the sophomore and a junior, where do you go to school? South Medford High School. I said, well, I'll buy some chocolates from you, but you got to earn it. And they said, okay. I said, I got some multiplication questions for you. Do you know your multiplication tables?
Uh-oh.
And they looked at me with a blank stare. They didn't know what multiplication tables were.
Well, they don't use multiplication tables any longer.
Well, I just discovered that.
Yeah.
So I said, what's 7 times 7? And they start counting. I said, no, you can't count on your fingers. You got to give me the answer right. We got to memorize it. And so I ended up buying one bar from them because I let them work as a team because one of them came up with it and the other one didn't. And so I go in the store, I get some cash, I come back out. I said, you know, I'm going to give them a second bite of the apple.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, I'm going to give you girls a reprieve. And they look at me with the blanket stare. They didn't know what in the hell reprieve means. I said, well, I'm going to give you a second chance. Oh, okay. And I said, do you know what cubed is? And they look at it. Another question, you know, deer in the headlights.
Huh.
I said, well, do you know what squared is? One of them knew what squared was.
Well, that's good.
Okay,
that's good.
I'm going to give you a question. What is 3 cubed? And the one girl I see her, you know, using her fingers, you know.
And of course, you and I both know it's 27, right? 3 cubed.
Yeah, right away. And I'm thinking, you know, I learned those in the 7th grade. Some people learn them earlier and in high school. But, you know, not to pick on these two girls, I hope my daughter's not listening, but she graduated from Oregon State and she didn't know what 8 times 7 was. And that seems to be one of the stoppers on people that have learned their multiplication tables.
There's been a real focus, from what I understand. Now, I'm not exactly sure the root of this, but there is a push that, well, we have to get rid of rote learning, times tables, you know, those sort of things. And you know, I learned that. To me, it was like you learned the basics, the basic building blocks of mathematics, and you knew what 7 times 7 is, or 7 times 6, or, you know, 12 squared or cubed or whatever, you know, all those kind of things. And, you know, you get the basics of it, and then you're able to get the concepts. It's like they're trying to teach concepts first rather than the actual rudimentary building blocks of it. That seems to be what's going on, isn't it?
God forbid you learn all, 52 states? You know, that's got to be road learning. You got to memorize it.
Yeah, just commit it to memory. I don't know. Maybe we're just to the point where you're just supposed to do it on the phone here. Yikes. Thanks for sharing the story. Whoa. Hi, this is Bill. Good morning. Who's this?
This is Miner Dave.
Hi, Dave. What's on your mind?
You down here in Siskiyou County.
What's that? Okay, one more time. Start from the beginning, Dave. I missed your first statement. Go ahead.
I said what they do for the homeless down here in Siskiyou County is they got one place you can go to. They don't do anything for you. They might let you pitch a tent, but they won't give it to you. And then it's right across the street from where they give psychological help. They call it the human sciences building. Where you can walk in and get help if you're crazy. I mean, you know, if you need mental help.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't do anything else.
That's it, huh?
Right. They let you camp there.
Yeah. They'll let you camp there, but it's about it. Yeah, it's interesting. My wife, Linda, used to have her, she had a consulting business, and she worked for a nonprofit here, or she had a contract with a nonprofit that would do surveys in different communities in Southern Oregon and Northern California. And for this nonprofit, she went into Northern California one time and doing a survey and talking to city leaders. And she was talking, I think it was in Siskiyou County, and maybe it was Shasta, and asked him, well, what kind of homelessness programs do you have here in your city and in your community? And we said, we don't have any homelessness community programs at all. And she said, really, none. And why is that? And they said, because if we build it, they will come, Dave. That's what they said back then. Yeah, and that was probably 15 years ago.
Yeah, they have HUD here, but it's a long waiting list.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you got a drug problem, you got to get over the drug problem, or you're not going to get that help.
Yeah, the drug problem is a big deal. Hey, appreciate the call. Good hearing from you. 6:39 at KMED. Running a little late on the news. We'll get on the news and then the other news here coming from Salem, the Marble Nut House, with State Senator Noah Robinson, the latest on the book ban.
Save big with Oregon E-Deals. Pick up a $100 Cartwright's Market gift card for just $85. Perfect for your next shopping trip. Need property cleanup? Get $120 off dust and curbs basic service valued at $220. Now only $100. And treat yourself to a relaxing day with a $50 Organic Elements Wellness Spa certificate, now only $30. Visit OregonEDeals.com and click the Medford link to grab these amazing deals.
I'm saving big.
Latest news brought to you by locally owned and operated Artisan Bakery Cafe in South Medford. It's a full-service cafe offering breakfast, lunch, and specialty coffees. You'll be wowed one bite at a time.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. After a judge put the brakes on the city of Grants Pass homeless plan again, Grants Pass Mayor Clint Scherf says the community is concerned about public safety and lawlessness associated with the homeless and pledges action by the city council. Now, how remains a question. The Grants Pass City Council has a meeting scheduled for this Wednesday. They'll look at how to deal with the latest roadblock. As federal funding cuts to the USDA start to go into effect this month, local food banks are preparing. The USDA announced a termination of two COVID-era funding initiatives for food banks nationwide. The Josephine County Food Bank serves about 21,000 people a month. They hope donations will help fill what they believe will be a 20% decrease in food purchases. The state of emergency in Burns and Harney County continues with much of that area flooded. Rapid snowmelt is blamed, exacerbated by recent rainfall. The state is mobilizing manpower to help. Bill London, KMED.
There's been a crew of roofers out there for nearly three decades.
28 years to be exact, son.
Their mission? To terminate old roofs and replace them with bold, enduring new ones.
Terminate with extreme prejudice.
Their purpose? To prevent structural chaos and decimation.
I don't care if we're running out of roofing nails. Find some!
Their experience follows them everywhere. A constant. Like a shadow.
We're going to need continuous flashing on that ridge. That's not negotiable.
This season, Mother Nature is upping the ante, and Fontana Roofing will see that and go all in.
Hold the line. Hold the line. Wait for it. Wait. Ladders up! Go, go, go!
The Fontana Roofing Team stands between you and the gathering storm.
Ooh-wee! I love the smell of bent metal in the morning.
Your personal journey of epic building security starts at FontanaRoofingServices.com.
The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
Streamed on KMED.com, 6:42. State Senator Noah Robinson. Noah, welcome back. Great to have you on. Good morning, sir.
It's great to be on. Thank you very much.
All right. What is going on in the state Senate? Because you dropped me a note yesterday that Senate Bill 1098, it's 1098, right? Isn't that the bad?
That's right. It's
okay.
1098.
Yeah, 1098 ended up passing, and it also ended up passing with Republican support. And this is the bad books, it's the bad books in school bill. They're calling it something about dialing down the ability to challenge it. But what happened? Give me the story.
Well, as far as the one Republican vote, I don't know why Anderson voted for it. I haven't talked to him. I was disappointed about that. This is mostly a Democrat-pushed deal. The 1098, as you know, there's materials in the public school libraries for children that is inappropriate for children to be reading. It's wildly inappropriate. And people have been trying to get this removed for a while and have not been successful. It's been difficult. So instead of addressing that problem, they're trying to make it harder. And this bill is actually worse than it looks at first glance. It develops a process overseen by the Department of Education, makes it very difficult. The review process becomes incredibly lengthy. But it references non-discrimination statutes in Oregon law that, if you look back and read them correctly, actually will prevent taking out graphically inappropriate material because we're referencing activities of protected classes.
So MIT, interpret this. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I'm just kind of a smack my head moment here, Senator. All right. We have a smutty LGBTQ theme book, right? Mm-hmm. And so you want to take that out because it's smutty, but then we're being told that you can't take it out because you're discriminating against the LGBTQ groups.
Yes, and the content of the stories is protected by 1098 as well, not just the authorship.
Okay, and so if the author is a member of a protected class, which, by the way, I think is a constitutional outrage to have anything as a protected class, because that you're claiming that some people's rights are more precious than others, and that really bothers me in the first place. But I guess Oregon doesn't mind that.
Yeah. So we already have that issue. But the problem is, you see, that the discrimination statute that already is in Oregon law, just for schools, just addresses people. So you can't, if you have a child going to a school, whatever their race, religion, whatever, and it includes these classes, you can't discriminate against them. But it does not say in Oregon law that you have to promote what they're doing or describe in detail what they're doing in books in the school libraries. But the 1098 protects books. It gives this long process, but it specifically says that you have to that the content of the stories is protected too. So it brings in this whole realm of, well, if the story is about stuff that you shouldn't have in books, certainly not for children, then it's protected. And we distributed, several of us distributed on the Senate floor. There are a lot of examples of books right out of public schools.
Mm-hmm.
Really bad examples. We had someone redact them and take out a lot of the worst stuff. It was still pretty bad. Showed it to the Secretary of the Senate. Can we distribute this? No, it's still inappropriate for the Senate floor, so we had to take more out.
But once again, we're back in this situation that to distribute the smutty school books, you were talking about trying to stop Senate Bill 1098, get them to understand, they told you that it was too inappropriate to distribute these books to the Senate, but then the Senate votes to say that you can't challenge these smutty books in school. It's insane.
No, it's absolutely insane. And I don't understand why they would go for this. It's crazy. And this will directly hurt children. First, of course, the exposure to the material is harmful. Plus, we have a problem with children learning to read. And they need to start reading at a young age and read widely. If their parents don't feel comfortable sending them to the school library and saying, pick a book and read it, starting to worry, do we have to filter the school library books, which you really have to do if this sort of stuff is in place, and already it's a problem. I mean, this is also going to hurt children's ability to read at a young age because they're not going to get the encouragement from the parents that they need.
With Senate Bill 1098, Senator Robinson, what would it take to actually ban a book? What kind of books could be banned under this? And I don't even want to call it banned. What kind of books could not be forced purchased by the taxpayer? Because that's really what we're talking about. Because no one's banning books. No one's saying you can't go out and buy a copy of Haters and give it to your kid and they can go through the smutty sex scenes all they want with parental approval. The matter is if taxpayers should be forced to pay for Haters and other books like it in the school libraries.
That's right. And put them in school libraries. That's right. I looked up some of the books that had been brought to our attention. You know, you can get them for $10, $11 on Amazon. If the parents really want them for the price of breakfast, they can go get them for their children. But they should not be in taxpayer-funded, endorsed by taxpayer-funded school libraries. And as far as your question, what could you take out? I think if you read the law literally, I think it would be very difficult to take anything out.
So parents will have no recourse then when it comes to keeping smutty and inappropriate material out of their children's hands in the school system?
Well, there will be a process. They have described a very narrow process, a long, narrow process, which you can go through. And, of course, Senator Fredericks, who was pushing this, says, oh, no, it'll work. You've got a local process. And then, of course, there's a...
Well, if there's a local process, then we don't need a state law.
Yeah, well, that's right. He says, oh, we're just putting in law. His argument is that we're just putting in law what's already being done, and we're putting more oversight in place, and then we are protecting classes of people so that their bark books will not be targeted. Now, there is no evidence that these people are being targeted. There's no evidence. I have never heard of someone saying, we don't like black people, so we're going to take their book out. I just don't hear that.
Yeah, but what has been a lot of this has been just graphic, pornographic sex scenes in these books. And unfortunately, I have to tell you, a lot of it is coming from the Island of Misfit Humans. And this is kind of giving credence to the people that are saying that there seems to be some within these groups that are kind of grooming. They want to groom the population and condition them. What would you say, Senator?
Well, you see, that's the thing. That's what really bothers me. The only real reason to do this is if you're a part of one of these groups with odd ideas that deliberately wants to expose them to young children, because that is the only real effect that this will have. There's concern. There's major concern about what's in the school libraries now, and I've heard from a lot of people. I've gotten emails, I've got phone calls. This issue has been going on for years, and these books are not appropriate. And yet, for some reason, there's an effort to keep them in the schools. And when you have, and we've got books promoting drug use. I mean, the title, apparently, I didn't know this. When someone explained to me, the title of one of these books is Slang for Methamphetamine. The book itself glorifies drug use and other inappropriate stuff.
Well, I know that we have a real shortage of people going into the homelessness camps that are high on methamphetamine and addicted to it. We need more of those. So, yeah, please condition them through the school libraries. That would be great. That's a great use of tax dollars. I'm being very sarcastic here, Noah.
Yeah, of course. No, it's an issue that really bothers me, and I fought hard against it. And I think by any reasonable standard, I mean, we were right, but they just ignored us. The vote, of course, was set going in. Of course, it has to go over to the House. I hope there's more common sense prevails over there. But the fact that this passed out of the Senate is shocking, especially when we pointed out what this law would do. And when there were things sitting on everyone's desk, properly redacted so we could distribute them without having them thrown out, that showed what we were trying to stop. We were explaining that this law would leave these things in the schools, and they voted for it anyway. And I think it's unfortunate the Democrats sometimes just all vote together without, mm-hmm. I think, looking closely at what they're doing. At least that's not my way.
Senator Anderson, I don't know if there's much hope for him at this point. When you hear that that kind of a vote, such an unwise vote, in my opinion, maybe if you can find out why, I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know. I haven't talked to him about it, and I was very disappointed about that. And, you know, there's always pressure on that because the Democrats want to say everything's bipartisan. And one vote, they will say is bipartisan, which is disappointing. So I don't know why he decided to do that. But, of course, I know the Democrats would badly have wanted that.
All right. State Senator Noel Robinson with me this morning. Is there any way that you think, looking at the reading of Senate Bill 1098, that local school boards can countermand this or get around it? Or could they even do something as radical, and this would be radical, defunding the purchase of books? Just not buy. I'm serious.
Yeah.
In other words, we're not going to buy any books. We're not buying any books. The books we have are the books we have, and that's it.
Well, if they don't have anything bad in the libraries now, and I guess that's a possibility, they could do that. I mean, maybe they could. I don't know, though, because it's not just a question of purchase. I think if the books were given to them, they might have trouble rejecting them. The question is, are they going to follow the law closely or not? Are those that promoted this, that wanted this law, are they going to insist that these books, which are covered under the law, remain or not? And the evidence is that they will, because they're in the libraries now, and there's been resistance to taking them out.
And the standard now, the official state standard, Senator, if Senate Bill 1098 ends up passing the House and would likely be signed by Governor Kotek, there is no standard then for school libraries. Effectively, no standard, as smutty or as inappropriate as you want.
That's my reading of the bill. And we gave them a good alternative, because you can do something that's called a minority report when you have two members of the committee, because I'm on the Education Committee, Senator Weber. We both voted against 1098. And then we submitted a minority report. And the minority report actually would have helped, because what the minority report did was it clarified that the local districts, this was entirely up to the local districts, that they could develop their own process. So when you give it to the local districts to decide on every book, then they can make reasonable decisions. No reasonable school board is going to say these books are good. And in cases where, and we're talking about books for children, so that, you know, there's some adult themes in some books, and there will be borderline cases, and they can sort that out. But we don't have to have every book in the school library, and the bad ones will be immediately recognized by any reasonable board and would be gone. So that's what we propose. We propose that instead they put that in statute, give it to the local districts, everything will be fine. Local control, it works.
Have they noticed that that people are voting and walking away from the public school system, Senator? Have they noticed that?
They've noticed it, but they still got control of most of the children. At this point, I mean, I would like, I'm trying to see what I can do. I would very much like to improve the public school system, because the children in the public school system are not getting the educations they should.
But it appears that if you really want your child to be educated at this point, as much as you're trying to save the public school system, the only way to save your child right now is to get him or her out of it. It sounds that way.
That's right. I would advise any parent that possibly can. Homeschooling is great. If you can't do that, you can afford it at a private school. Charter schools, in some cases, are a little bit limited, but there are some of them. I would say at this point, anything but a public school. And at the same time, we have to fix the public schools. So many of the children are going through it. So I find this issue very frustrating, because I want children to have good education. And right now, some of them get decent educations, but the average is very poor.
Yeah. Number 45, depending on who you look at for the state rankings.
Yeah. This argument, is it 45? Is it 48? And remember, that's in a country where the average isn't good either. So the fact that we're at the bottom of
that's
the poor average.
Even the average is not all that great. But hey, we're better than Puerto Rico, though, Senator. I guess that's all that matters. Yay. Okay.
Yeah, great.
Hang on just a second. Let me see. Someone may have a question for you. Hi, good morning, caller. You're with Senator Robinson. Question or comment? Go ahead.
Well, a quick comment. So if the Senate is not allowing Senator Noah to present these books, is that not depriving him of his rights to read these books, and also the rights?
I think you're misinterpreting it. No one's stopping anybody from reading.
But let me finish though. But they're also saying that they're not allowing the message to be shared by the author, and seems to me that that would be a violation of both the author's rights, and by not reading it in the entirety, that's depriving them of the right to get the full message out there.
I don't understand what you're saying. Unless you're trying to be sarcastic.
Yeah, pretty much. It's just I'm appalled by the way things are going, basically.
Oh, okay. All right. You see, yeah. Give me a wink. Okay, I appreciate the call. All right. Thank you for that.
Just to clarify, the books that we used as examples in Redacted were not appropriate. The only reason I think they were even considered appropriate to be on the desk is that nobody could see them from the cameras. I haven't seen anything that bad. And I
well, you couldn't make up the hypocrisy that the books are too smutty and inappropriate to share among the state capitol people, the adult lawmakers, but it is perfectly appropriate to stop anybody from challenging them in government school libraries. That's the part. That's the outrageous part.
That's exactly the point. Yep.
Yeah. Let me go to another line. Hi, you're on with Senator Noah Robinson. Good morning. Who's this? Okay, I guess they weren't quite ready to do battle, I suppose. All right, Senator, what's next? It goes to the House, probably passes then, and then off to a signature. So this is just the reality where we're living?
Well, I never give up. I would definitely contact the representatives in the House. This same bill was passed by the Senate last year in 23 and did not succeed. They did not push it in the House. So for whatever reason, I don't know.
So there is there is a hope that actually the House might be more sensible, possible.
That's what I hope. Now, I know the Democrats control it over there, but it hasn't passed the House yet. I would definitely, if you care about this issue, definitely email your representatives and let them know what you think of it, because this is not protecting children. This is pushing an ideology. This is harmful. And you're doing this at the same time we need to be doing real things to fix the educational problems. And it's just bizarre to me.
You know, I think you've just given me a comment to send to State Representative Pam Marsh, because I would imagine Pam Marsh, being Democrat, might be in favor of this. But, you know, as poor the quality, you know, this idea that you can't challenge something that, you know, if the theme is about a protected class or the author is a protected class, it just goes through unfettered. That is the worst kind of discrimination in the world, as far as I'm concerned. It's just horrid.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
Senator, I appreciate the take. Thank you very much. We'll have you back. Wish the news were better, but this is Oregon after all. But thank you again. Be well.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Say before 7, this is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass.